and we both had to get ready.
Melissa stuck her tongue out at him, then turned to Lisa.
You want to stay for breakfast? I'm pretty sure your only options are expired cereal and also expired cereal, but you can mix the two if you want a really crazy time.
Lisa smiled, but shook her head.
Sorry, but I need to run to work. Oh, sorry. Did we mess up your schedule? No worries. I'm actually closer than I would be normally. I just had a lot of appointments scheduled for today.
Lisa stepped up to Rick and stood awkwardly. For a moment, it looked like she might shake his hand, which would have been incredibly uncomfortable, but she settled for just smiling at him.
I'm glad I could help the two of you, Rick. I really am. I'll see you at the gym, all right?
He nodded. Sure. See you next time. With that, she headed out of the apartment. After lingering on the walkway for a moment, glancing back, she stepped over the railing and lifted into the air. Instead of watching her go, Rick walked back inside and locked the door slowly, knowing what he was going to face when he turned around, but delaying it while he could.
I like her a lot.
When he turned, Melissa snapped her fingers into double finger guns.
If you know what I mean.
Oh, I wouldn't dream of standing between the two of you.
You better not be dreaming of it, you perv.
Abruptly, his sister's smirk dissolved into a softer smile.
Rick, for the first time in so long, I feel like I can beat this. I always thought I'd just need to take what I could from life before, well, the inevitable. But now?
Melissa shook her head slowly and moved forward to embrace him. Rick wrapped his arms around her and held her for a while, like they hadn't since they'd been much younger. They'd spent a lot of time sitting side by side, but after making it through such an experience, they needed the connection. When the moment had passed and she started to pull away, though, he couldn't resist. It's still inevitable, you know. We're never going to be rich enough to become immortal, so, medical condition or not, we're gonna die. She grinned and punched him in the stomach ineffectually.
Way to ruin the moment, bro.
Sorry, I guess that's your job.
Seriously, not messing around for a second, I do think Lisa is into you. She doesn't have as many social circles as she used to, and her clients tend to view her as just a contractor. Plus, she has creepy types, given her job. I'm not going to push, since it's your life, but I'm sure she thinks of you as a friend instead of just somebody she pays to beat up.
Wait, did you get all that from the very first time the two of you met? I guess that's the connection between women. Melissa rolled her eyes.
Or, you know, she spent several hours helping to save my life. That tends to break the ice a bit. I was nervous, and so she started talking to calm me down, and we had a lot of time to talk.
You don't have a lot of time right now, though. You need to go to school. When Melissa groaned, he just kept talking over it. I know that it seems ridiculous, but they were already pretty upset about yesterday. But it's just half a year now, then you'll graduate.
Yeah, I know. Just a huge letdown after everything else.
She went to get her things, but kept glancing back at him as she got ready.
There's something I wanted to ask you about before I go. Just something odd with the solution we found. I considered asking Lisa, but I did just meet her. Besides, this feels...
He stepped closer, concern on his face. Are you all right?
I think I am, but that's why I wanted to check. See, you suggested that I was supposed to push the Lucrum away from the fire where my soul should be.
It's not that you don't have a soul, it's that the form isn't what you'd commonly expect. The exact terminology of soul is a bit of a misnomer because...
Oh, shut up. Let me pretend to be a soulless abomination.
Her smile faded quickly, and she stopped gathering her books, focused on him.
The problem was that I couldn't push the Lucrum. I saw what you wanted me to do, but it was just too difficult.
Creating a Lucrum shell with an empty space inside it is both complex and counterintuitive, so I'm not surprised. But when I sense you, it feels like you created a shell anyway. What happened?
Well, I kept trying, which made me think a lot about the flame. I'd always held back since it was called a void, thinking that I'd fall into it or that focusing on it would make things worse. But when I started focusing on the flame, it didn't feel so wrong. When I touched it, for a moment it didn't burn me. It got bigger.
Rick listened in silence, trying to keep his face neutral. He hadn't seen Melissa this serious in a long time, and her eyes wandered, never quite meeting his.
So I worked with that. I made the flame burn really hot for a while and just burned the inside of the sphere until I'd hollowed out the entire thing. It did backfire when I went too far, and I'd have been in trouble if you hadn't come to help me, but
She finally looked at him, playfulness gone to reveal vulnerability.
That wasn't wrong, was it? I didn't break myself somehow?
No, I don't think so. He pulled her into another quick hug. I'm not an expert, but what you've built feels stable. Just keep an eye on it and don't worry unless something changes drastically.
Oh, that's good. Everyone was so happy and I was just sitting there wondering if it was all ruined somehow. I mean, I'd prefer to know for sure, but just hearing you say that helps me feel better.
Actually, I think I can do better than that. Rick pulled out his phone and navigated to the medical app. If there's anything seriously wrong, this should give us an alert. Melissa Hunter, Lucrum Generation, 6514. Current Lucrum, 426. Ether Void, -100. It was odd that the Ether Void value sat at exactly -100, but he decided not to focus on that to avoid making her nervous. Instead, he flipped to the In-Depth tab that showed the value over time. See? Last night, when things stabilized, the void value jumped up, or down, I guess, to -100, and it's stayed there ever since.
And that's good? You actually look at that app a lot more than I do.
Yes, it's good. Normally, even when you were doing fine, there were constant little fluctuations. Earlier, I spent a lot of time looking at them, seeing if there was any kind of pattern that we could use to predict when a fit would occur.
Oh, you did? You never mentioned that.
Melissa smiled at him, some of her nervousness fading. He brushed aside the sentiment, now very focused on the numbers. It never did any good, but I can promise you we haven't seen stability like this before. Now, it's weird that it's at -100 instead of zero, but I think you don't have any reason to be nervous.
That's a relief. It really is.
But beyond that, your numbers are way different. Here, let me access your Lucrema portfolio. Name, Melissa Hunter. Ether tier, NA, minor. Ether score, NA, minor. Lucrum generation, 6514. Current Lucrum, 426. Melissa Hunter's Lucrema portfolio. Foundation, 1950, level 1. Lucor mass, 3464, NA. Steel Lucor, 1100, level 1. Total Lucrem, 6514. He'd seen it before, but hadn't quite believed it until he saw her full portfolio. It was natural that his sister would have increased her generation rate, given the high-quality philosopher's elixir she'd been drinking, but this was explosive growth. That could only mean one thing. You've developed a mature Lucrema soul, sis. You're not a minor anymore.
It explicitly says I'm a minor.
The ratings agencies always take time to update, and they consider a whole bunch of things, including age, so it might not change officially for a while. What matters is that your numbers went way up, which is the real sign. Rick frowned as he considered them. Your foundation percentage is pretty good, actually. Better than mine. Make sure not to lose that. If you don't pay attention, spare lucrum will go toward your foundation inefficiently.
Oh, God. Am I going to become a numbers-obsessed guy now?
Melissa gave a mock groan, but he saw happiness underneath the act.
Are you going to start making me come into the gym and learn the cosmic fist? What if I don't want my life to be just going around cosmic fisting people?
Please don't say it that way. Rick smiled and put his phone away. You don't need to worry about it for now, and you do need to get to school. But since this is your health at stake, you need to pay attention to these things.
Yeah, I'm just playing with you.
Melissa had her own phone out, checking her numbers.
This Lucor mass bit is lucrum I have, but haven't invested toward anything, right?
That's right. Even if you're not interested in anything else, it'd be worth your while to put it toward improving your health or a bit of defense for safety.
But what's this steel Lucor? I mean, I guess it has to be the shell, but what does that mean?
Can't tell you for sure. A year ago, he would have been clueless, but the mess with the golden Lucor left him with a bit of information for her. I don't know if the names are purely random or if they're descriptive, but it'd feel pointless to use adjectives if they were meaningless. So maybe we should be encouraged that it used steel for your show.
I choose to take it that way.
Melissa put her phone away and swung her backpack up onto one shoulder. Before she left, she leaned up beside him and kissed him on the cheek.
Thanks for everything. I'll see you after school.
With that, she was off. Rick looked after her for a while, concerned out of habit, but maybe the difficulties were finally over. It was a relief to know that she was stable, but he was also left to consider his own growth as he hadn't for some time. He was surprised at how damaged his foundation felt. It wasn't as if he'd been pushing himself especially hard, certainly not in combat, but maybe all his work had cost him. Then again, what remained felt dense and fire-hardened, not weak. It would take some work to rebuild it for use in combat, but perhaps it would be a step forward in the end. A notification popped up on his phone. When Rick saw that it was a request from Granny Whitney to attend another match, he didn't even blink. Compared to what he'd just been through, he could handle this. Chapter 25. Public Techniques. When Rick showed up for his fight, Granny Whitney didn't ask him about what had happened even once. She gave him another disabling pill, but he managed to push through the fight. His victory was far from elegant, but he was the last one standing. Afterward, she handed him a bottle of 100K elixir with an odd smile on her face.
Not bad at all, dearie. Perhaps you're ready for a higher dose.
All he could do was shake his head. Give me some more time to work on my foundation first.
I suppose you do have work to do. Very well, we still have time.
Granny Whitney looked like she was about to walk out again, so he spoke up to stop her. I'm ready to begin working on the aura leeches again. Do you think I can take out the smaller one before the competition? She turned back, shaking her head.
You could do that, but only if getting rid of one of them is more important to you than efficiency. The larger debt is stage two, so it's draining you faster.
Math wasn't his strong suit, but he saw the logic. If his goal with each invested lucrum was to decrease the drain on his strength, then it should all go toward the more dangerous debt, even if it meant he had both aura leeches inside him for longer. What was the difference between one ghostly creature draining his strength and two, though? Best to focus on the long term. Thanks, I'll do that. Rick nodded to her gratefully. Is there anything else I should be doing to prepare?
Perhaps another core? I'll leave that to your discretion, dearie. Granny Whitney needs to go on a little vacation.
With that line, she departed, humming a little tune to herself. He honestly wasn't sure if that was a cover for something else, or if she was actually going to go relax on a beach somewhere. With his next objective set, Rick threw himself into training over the next several weeks. His first goal was to fix the damage to his foundation, both because he ran the risk of taking a serious injury without it, and because he wanted the spare lucrum. He put some of it toward paying off the aura leech, but began gathering more of it to fashion into a new core, though he hadn't made his final decision there yet. Though the difference wasn't dramatic, he appreciated the benefits of the Graham Stake Lucor. The slow flow of power within him wouldn't pay a utility bill, but it left him more refreshed. Usually he had to hold back on expending lucrum while sparring or fighting, needing every iota of it until his next paycheck. Now he had the option of relying on his new core, though he still intended to save every lucrum instead, to keep fighting out of his situation. Meanwhile, he kept an eye on Melissa just in case there were any new problems, but she seemed stable. More than stable. She was thriving. She remained pale and thin, yet she was always improving her shell and took up experimenting with other types of core. Even if she joked about muscle heads and people who trained all day, it was fun to be able to discuss lucrum with her. The main difficulty was that they were desperately poor, thanks to all their expenses during her illness. No more taxis for him. He ran everywhere to save what he could. Even once he received his next paycheck, it was immediately absorbed paying off the bills that had begun to stack up. It led to some pretty pathetic meals, but they got through it together. Eventually, he'd built up enough available lucrum that he wanted to invest it, but he wasn't sure how. He talked to Henry, and even tried to get advice from Jimmy, yet didn't feel like he got any satisfactory answers. They might both be stronger than him, but that didn't mean he wanted to emulate their paths in life. He managed to get in contact with Uncle Frank again after a while. His uncle mostly confirmed that his idea of developing a speed or ability core would be a good step forward, which was nothing new. However, his uncle also reminded him of a resource he hadn't been thinking about. The public library. Rick jogged down the sidewalk in the middle of Branton, looking for the building he hadn't visited in years. Soon he spotted the familiar shape, heavily fortified walls along the sides, with spires rising from the top for Lucrema users to use as fighting platforms. The Branton Public Library also had large open windows, which ruined the look of the fortress, but it wasn't exactly a traditional library. Centuries ago, most knowledge had been firmly controlled by the powers of the world. They began by hoarding their secrets of Lucrem techniques, but that attitude had expanded to cover all knowledge. Eventually, a group of powerful warriors had banded together with a radically different purpose: to make knowledge free for everyone. Though they faced vicious attacks from many combat sects, in the end they were victorious. The libraries didn't revolutionize the Lucrem or martial arts worlds, not trying to archive every hidden technique, but they did make knowledge available to the masses. That change had kickstarted the Industrial Revolution, and now they received federal funding. No sect would dream of attacking the libraries now, though they didn't need to. As he walked closer, Rick noticed that the sidewalk leading up to the entrance was in poor shape. What he had thought were random bushes were actually meant to be trimmed in the shape of famous librarians, instead allowed to grow beyond their normal shape, giving the impression that the famous librarians had the shape of balls of dough. The internet and the increasing corporatization of Lucrem had eaten into the base of support for libraries. As he walked in, he saw parents bringing children and a few teenagers who had no better options than the library's ancient computers, but almost no warriors. Once inside, he found himself a bit uncertain where to go next. They had shelves of popular books near the front, with nonfiction off to one side. No sign of Lucrem technique manuals anywhere, but perhaps those were held somewhere more secure. With no clear idea where to start, Rick just headed up to the front counter.
"Can I help you?"
A middle-aged man looked up from the books he was sorting and smiled warmly.
"I'm looking for techniques. Manuals, scrolls, that sort of thing. Do you still have them?"
"Really?"
The man's smile wavered, but soon returned.
"Well, suit yourself. I don't think I can help you very much, but if you talk to Heather over here, she can probably find you what you need."
Rick thanked the man and left, wondering about that reaction. The middle-aged man had seemed perfectly nice, just disappointed in a fatherly way. He only had a generation rate around 40,000 Lucrem, with little sign that he had invested power toward combat. Perhaps he didn't approve of the traditional purpose of libraries. In any case, he had pointed him toward a young woman pushing a cart between the shelves, replacing books. Her short hair was dyed bright pink, she wore dark leather with flowery wristbands, and he could see tendril-like tattoos peeking out from her sleeves. When he approached, she looked up at him, revealing that she also wore thick, circular glasses.
"Hello there. Can I help you find something?"
Not sure what to make of her, Rick just pushed forward. "I'm looking for Lucrem techniques."
"Oh!"
Heather immediately perked up.
"Wow, we hardly get anybody like that anymore. Screw all these books. Let's head down to the archives and see if we can't find something for you. I'm Heather, by the way. Did I mention that?"
She led him away from the main parts of the library, which were brightly lit and in better repair, to a dusty back corridor. They reached a heavily armored door, and she began flipping through keys on her ring, talking to him all the while.
"I don't like it, but that's where the funding is these days. Everybody wants name-brand skills, not the old classics, which is just absurd. Name-brand skills? You pick up a technique just because some fucking celebrity did?"
"I agree that last part is illogical," Rick said, "but I think the rest makes sense. The big corporations and sects have some of the best skills, and even if there are good alternatives, there's some value in surprising someone with unusual techniques." Heather snorted.
"Half of what's written about that kind of thing is bullshit, if you ask me. Everyone is all, 'This technique is optimized for 23-year-old half-Samoan, half-Ugandan, left-handed dentists,' as if it really makes a difference. We all have flesh and blood. We all have lucrema souls. I'm not saying there are no differences, but there are only so many ways you can accomplish a goal like go fast or blow things up before you... Oh, here it is."
She found the key she needed and unlocked the door, then held it open for him. Rick walked in and peered through the dark shelves. Many were filled with books in the classic manual style, but he saw individual scrolls, clay tablets, and several microfilm readers. There was an enormous amount of knowledge here, even if it was knowledge that was publicly available.
"So,"
Heather leaned against one of the shelves and folded her arms as she watched him.
What kind of technique are you looking for?
Until that moment, he had still been trying to decide. Her ranting had actually been what pushed him to one side. She was right. There were limits to how much the basic techniques could vary. Gaining a well-known ability might be a liability, but gaining a classic form of speed would probably be indistinguishable from many alternatives. I'm looking to create a speed core.
You're gonna have to be way more specific than that.
Something for combat, not sprinting. It should probably include some aerial agility. Doesn't need to involve flying at all, but most importantly, I want something good. Rick shrugged awkwardly. Sorry, that's a bad description. I just mean that it shouldn't be something that will be obsolete in a few years, or with serious drawbacks in certain conditions that would limit its effectiveness.
Well, you're not gonna find the perfect technique anywhere, much less at the library.
Heather screwed up her face, thinking seriously.
But there are totally skills you wouldn't regret. My first thought for combat is always size bull. If you want depth, I suppose you could try Bunyan's step. If you're in a hurry, though, best to go for a generic tech, like Swift Fist or Kentucky Hoof.
A few of those sounded familiar, probably from a teacher droning on in history class. It was good to have options, but what did you mean by depth?
For Bunyan's step? It's one of those skills that doesn't have a million variants, just a few that can be used flexibly. It's not complex, but because of that simplicity, you can do more with it, you know? Give it enough time, and it can really evolve into something strong.
That sounds promising. Let me see that, then.
Fan-fucking-tastic. Right this way.
Heather led him through the shelves with unhesitating certainty. Her rapid pace and unwavering gaze were not at all hampered by the fact that they doubled back several times. She didn't seem to know precisely where she was going. She was just heading there with great certainty. But in the end, she swiveled on one heel and plucked a book from the shelf. It was a rather heavy one, dusty from the years, but she presented it to him like a treasure.
Ta-da! This one can teach you Bunyan's step, the associated core, and all that good shit. Also some other stuff you won't need, but we'll let you check out the whole book.
Though Rick took a while to page through the book, he soon felt certain that this technique would be a good choice. It was more devoted to bursts of speed than agility, but it could be used in mid-air, which was a significant advantage. There were also many pages at the end devoted to implementing the skill, covering real situations instead of precise forms. It was simple, but powerful. People might scorn it for coming from the public library, but he didn't think that he would regret choosing the skill. He said goodbye to Heather, who seemed disappointed to lose someone to talk to, and filled out the paperwork necessary to check out the book. Too eager to wait to get home, he skimmed through the important parts, then considered them carefully as he ran back. It took him several days to master the basics necessary to create his new core, during which time he barely did anything other than eat, go to work, and train. Eventually, on a day he had off while Melissa was still in school, he decided that now was the time. Between his training and improvements in his foundation, he had 3,600 lucrum capacity to dedicate to his portfolio. Perhaps not enough to impress birthriders, but that was an exceptional amount for him. Since much of it came from the improvements in his foundation, which he wouldn't get again, this decision would have quite some impact. If only he didn't have so many choices. Though he regretted it a little, he decided not to spend any lucrum getting rid of an aura leech. That would have helped a bit, but it would have been short-sighted. However, he also couldn't afford to throw it all into Graham's stake. Yes, the core was growing on its own and improving his long-term potential, but it did so very slowly compared to other factors, and he needed to care about the short term. To that end, he decided that he should invest the majority of it in Bunyan's step, then add some more to his defensive core, since that was his greatest strength. He couldn't eliminate his weaknesses, so his strengths needed to be potent enough to give him a real edge. It took him multiple hours to finish crafting the core to his satisfaction, but eventually he was done. Traditionally, he should have drunk serum or philosopher's elixir to restore his reserves, but there was nothing like that left in the house. But when he looked over his new portfolio, he found himself satisfied. Name, Rick Hunter. Ether tier, 18th. Ether score, 193. Lucrum generation, 24,400. Effective rate, 17,178. Current lucrum,
445. Rick Hunter's Lucrama portfolio. Foundation, 5200, level 3. Offensive Lucor, 3925, level 3. Defensive Lucor, 7375, level 6. Bunyan's Step, 3000, level 1. Graham's Stake, 3150, level 2. Aura Leech, negative 4623, stage 2. Aura Leech, negative 2599, stage 1. Tracking Bond, 100, level 13. Gross Lucrum, 24,400. Net Lucrum, 17,178. Finally, his Lucrum generation rate had increased past the point where he had been before his parents' inheritance had ruined him. His ether score was even recovering, apparently impressed by all his development. But most importantly, his cores had strengthened massively, and he now had a complete set. Offense, defense, and mobility. Most added special abilities to the main types, but he could wait. Wanting to improve his new core, Rick began testing it, hopping around the house. Unused to his newfound speed, he slammed into the walls a few times, prompting shouting and cursing from their neighbors. The style of movement was certainly strange, carrying him across space almost faster than he could react. That could be dangerous if he didn't get used to it, so he kept practicing. As he did, however, he considered the numbers again. As he'd feared, they didn't quite add up. His total generation rate was over 24,000, yet the value of his cores didn't even reach 23,000. Looking the symptom up online, he discovered that this was a common side effect of mistraining, injuries, or aura leeches. Had those Lucrum been lost forever? It didn't seem possible. Surely they must be floating in his system, even if the app didn't categorize them. The internet gave him only contradictory answers, so he set the issue aside for the time being. What mattered in the end was his ability to fight. When his phone interrupted his training, Rick assumed that it was Melissa, but the number was unknown. Assuming it was probably an automated call trying to sell him car insurance or claiming his demonic bond had come due, he ignored it. Yet the same number called back a second time. Rick stared at it for a while, then reluctantly picked up. "Hello? You there, Rick?" It was Tom from the underground. Rick felt a sense of uneasiness as he answered. "Yeah, I'm here. Why are you calling?" "I want you to come to my next match. Something is wrong. Alger seems way too happy about it. I've been asking around, but I can't get any concrete information." Tom took a deep breath. "I have a bad feeling about this. If something goes wrong, I'd like to have someone I can trust." After a long pause, Rick agreed. Hopefully this wouldn't be a mistake, but he was overdue for something to go wrong. Chapter 26. Chaos in the Underground. The stands at the underground were packed, but the crowd didn't seem any wilder than normal. Certainly nothing like the Slayer match. Though Rick had arrived and been able to talk to Tom a little, the other man didn't give him any information about what exactly he suspected was wrong. So all Rick could really do was keep his eyes open. In the days before the event, he'd trained himself extensively with the Bunyan's Step, raising the core to the second stage. More importantly, he felt he had a solid grasp on how to use it, so his new speed wouldn't end up being a liability. He didn't know if that would be enough, but he'd done all he could to prepare. If Granny Whitney had been there, he could have asked her, but she was still absent. The only person who might know much of anything was Alger. As usual, the underground's owner sat in the cheap seats, eagerly watching through the chain-link fence. Did he seem more manic than usual, or was that just the power of suggestion?
"Yo, Rick!"
He heard Henry's voice and turned to see his friend shouldering his way through the crowd.
"You don't come check out the fights very often."
"Tom asked me to come as some sort of backup."
"Shit, you too?"
Henry got close enough to him and lowered his voice to a level that could barely be heard under the roar of the crowd.
"I got pretty much the same thing, and I don't even know the guy all that well. The two of you at least fought together."
Rick frowned at that. "You don't suppose Tom is the one setting up some sort of scheme?"
"No idea. He's certainly been moving up the low ranks quickly. But could he really do that? I think it's a lot more likely that the owner has something weird in mind for him.
They sat down together and let their auras burn just a little, which was enough to keep the crowd from bumping into them. The match started not long after, but it was nothing special. Just an advanced melee, Tom against another group of people of comparable level. Not identical, though. Tom was showing his skills well. In addition to bolts arcing in every direction, he had some kind of new technique that let him slide across the ground on lightning. Ever since Alger had taken him on, he'd been getting quite a few advantages and was shooting up the ranks. Watching the fight wasn't going to do any good, Rick decided. For one, it would just irritate him. But more importantly, everybody was watching the fight. If anything was going to go wrong, it probably wouldn't happen there. He looked around for anyone suspicious, though he wasn't sure exactly what they would look like. Lots of different people came to the underground, but they tended not to be clean-cut family types. All he really noticed was that there was betting going on, both formally and a few men just grabbing bills and apparently tracking bets in their heads. Would it be rational to try to bet on the matches, or just throwing money away? Uncle Frank had always said gambling was a waste of time, and Rick had an aunt who blew every dollar she got in casinos. But this wasn't exactly pure gambling, because he thought he was a better judge of strength than the average customer, both due to experience and increasing knowledge of the fighters involved. Of course, the odds would be in favor of Tom for this match, so he couldn't earn anything that way. Could he bet on himself? Given how many of his matches involved him barely making it through due to Granny Whitney's handicapping, the odds were probably against him. It was probably illegal to bet on himself. But all of the fights were illegal anyway. Even if they didn't permit it, he could make an arrangement with someone else. Yet that solution seemed so obvious that he had to figure that other people would already have considered it. Perhaps it was too easy, unless others were already doing it and just not talking about it. Rick shook his head sharply. This was not the time for such things. He was here in case anything strange happened during the match, so he needed to stay focused. Since the brawl was still going on as normal, Rick instead looked above the main stands into the private boxes. By design, they were nearly invisible behind the lights, but if he peered, he could just make them out. All the windows were reflective enough that he couldn't see inside, so that didn't do him much good. Just out of curiosity, he began looking closer around each box, wondering how they connected to the tunnels around the arena and how close they were to the surface. Could someone hide up there? Unless there were hidden sensors, it would be the perfect place to take a shot. Given the height of the chamber, there was always the possibility of an attack from above as well. But if he had thought of both of those possibilities in a few minutes, surely Alger had thought of them. The underground's owner was watching the fight, not as engaged as usual. The way one knee bounced up and down. Perhaps he was impatient? That didn't bode well, but it didn't tell him anything more than he already knew from Tom. In the end, Rick didn't figure anything out before the match ended, leaving him feeling useless. Henry gave a low groan.
Was there even any point in us being here then?
I don't know.
Rick kept looking around as Tom waved to the crowd and then headed out.
What else is scheduled for the day?
Just some minor stuff to warm up the crowd, Tom's match, then something special. Wait a minute, shouldn't the entrances have opened by now?
Rick sat up straight, realizing that Henry was right. The Lucrum defenses hadn't dropped. Tom seemed a bit surprised as well and turned back just as Alger leapt to his feet, voice booming over the arena.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a special treat for you tonight. We've all seen our beloved Tom rise through the ranks with pluck and vigor. But can he face our special guest, who paid for a chance to face off against our best young warriors?
A single one of the entrances opened, and a short young man walked in. Despite his height, his body was well built, with a type of bulk that only short men could manage. He wore dark pants and a t-shirt that looked simple, yet high quality. That was when Rick recognized him, the third Birthrider who had been with Mike.
Please welcome Magnus Aster to the Underground!
The crowds cheered, though not as wildly as sometimes. Plainly, this was a bit of a surprise to them, too, not like the Slayer round. Magnus strolled into the arena confidently, raising a fist to the crowd, but Rick had stopped looking at him. For this to be a coincidence seemed impossible, so the question was why. Alger had said he paid for a chance to face young fighters. If that was the truth, then it seemed as though this strategy might have been intended to find or draw out Rick. If that was a front for something else, Rick had no way of knowing what it might be. He didn't entirely like either option.
"Looks like we're about the same age."
Magnus walked toward Tom, crackling the knuckles in one hand, then the other.
"This is all you have to show for yourself?"
"What I have, I earned."
Tom gathered his strength, electricity crackling along his arms.
"It wasn't handed to me."
"Let's see if that'll make any difference at all."
Tom raised a hand and released a barrage of bolts that arced across the arena, slow enough to be visible, but all converging on his opponent. Yet they exploded against a spherical barrier that had been invisible until the impacts. Magnus grinned and rushed forward. The fight was on, but Rick barely watched it. His eyes searched through the crowds until he saw them. Two figures in dark hoodies moving in his direction. Though the hoods obscured their identities, they looked suspicious as fuck. Now that he saw them, he couldn't believe that he hadn't noticed them before. Worse, they were getting close.
"Henry, he's here."
Rick elbowed his friend in the side and jerked his head in their direction.
"Mike is."
"What? Where's... Oh, they really stick out now that I notice them. What do we do?"
"I doubt he's coming over here for a pleasant chat. Do fights ever break out in the underground? In the audience, I mean?" Henry swallowed.
Yeah. They can get pretty ugly."
"Then let's get the hell out of here."
Rick turned to go, pushing his way through the crowd, and saw the hooded figures begin to sprint from the corner of his eyes. Though Rick got moving first, he tried to slip through the crowds while his pursuers barreled through. Rick and Henry managed to get down next to the ground floor, almost to the exit lane. There was a random, well-dressed man standing there for some reason, and for a moment Rick worried that he might be working with Mike, but the man only looked mildly surprised as he dodged around. One of the hooded figures smashed through him, sending the well-dressed man stumbling to the side. The hood fell down in the rush, and Rick saw that it was indeed Mike chasing him, with Glenn just after him. Henry turned back to face them, yellow armor forming around him, but Glenn rammed into him shoulder first. Both of them flew past, the yellow aura exploding as it was overwhelmed by the superior force. Rick wanted to help Henry, but he barely had time to look at him before Mike was suddenly in his face, grabbing the front of his shirt and then punching him in the face. The blow hurt, but it had only been designed to stun him. Rick stared blearily at Mike, who grinned as he lifted him into the air.
"I was going to come fight you in the arena, but this place is beneath me, so I think I'll just beat the shit out of you now."
As Mike raised his hand again, Rick considered his options. Most people were currently watching the arena, so only those they had knocked aside in their fight had noticed. He couldn't count on any help from Henry, given that he and Glenn were fighting. Going toe-to-toe with Mike in the entrance lane seemed like a sure way to lose. That didn't leave him with very many options. When Mike punched forward, Rick kicked off his chest. Not only that, he activated Bunyan's step when he did so, propelling him backward with explosive force. His back burned as it hit the lucrum-reinforced fence, but he smashed through. He hit the ground hard, skidding across the floor with some of the broken links digging into his back. Going through the barrier had hurt more than he expected. But he was now lying on his back in the center of the arena with everyone looking at him. Their gaze naturally went to the source of the blow and saw Mike standing on the other side of the broken fence, eyes wide in surprise.
"It's the police!"
Henry pushed himself away from Glenn long enough to yell.
"This is a sting!"
A moment later, Glenn grabbed his head and smashed him down into the ground, but that call was enough to unleash chaos. Not only did the crowd begin running and screaming, security forces who usually lingered near the outskirts began to move in. Alger was screaming orders, and it sounded like he was contradicting the lie, but it was too late for that. While Mike stared in horror at the mounting chaos, a tough-looking woman in leather came up behind him, grabbing his shoulder. He hit her instinctively, and she dropped back, but not far. Mike realized that the security might be able to overwhelm him with numbers and snarled. The smart thing to do would have been to run, but as Rick got to his feet, he realized that Mike wasn't going to take the smart option. Rick had a split second to prepare himself, and then Mike was sprinting across the arena, sending fleeing crowd members scattering in every direction. Prepared for such a direct attack, Rick had his first counter ready. Mike launched a predictable punch at him, and Rick turned the blow aside with one hand, then jerked his arm back, slamming his elbow directly into Mike's face. The blow landed cleanly and had all of his force behind it, but Mike had a generation rate of at least 150,000 lucrim. He grunted in pain, but then gave him a mocking grin.
"That all you got?"
As Mike attacked, Rick did his best to defend himself. He still had an advantage in terms of skill, but that wouldn't be enough to close the power gap between them. If he was going to make it through, or even win, he needed to use his environment somehow. A bolt of lightning seared between the two of them, forcing Mike to take a step back. Rick saw that Tom had released it, and the two nodded to each other. But Tom wouldn't be much help because he had his own problems. Magnus looked unharmed, his defensive sphere sparking as he charged toward them. There were a few audience members running across the arena floor as well, though any one of them could be a fighter. Right now, it seemed a general brawl had started, and Rick had no idea how long it would take to stabilize. This would be ugly unless he used the crowds to his advantage. If only they would get out of the way. Like the well-dressed man from before, who had blundered out into the arena. At that moment, the well-dressed man calmly kicked Tom in the side of the knee, snapping his leg in half. Chapter 27. The Hitman. Though he needed to stay focused, Rick couldn't help but stare for a moment. He'd assumed that the threat of this match was Mike and his cronies, yet now realized that he was wrong. Whoever the well-dressed man was, he had calmly ignored the fray, targeted Tom specifically, and broken his leg. Tom went down with a cry of pain, but even as he did so, he released a bolt of lightning at his attacker. Yet, the well-dressed man turned it aside with a flick of his hand, then kicked Tom in the side. It didn't seem like he was there to kill, but then why was he here? Rick saw that Magnus looked shocked by his arrival as well, so could it really be unrelated? Unfortunately, Mike didn't bother to read the situation and used Rick's distraction to punch him in the face. Rick staggered backward, tasting blood in his mouth. Even with his defenses, he couldn't afford to take blows from someone like Mike. It was the most he could do to deflect the follow-up attacks, his arms stinging as he retreated from Mike's assault. Just blocking would wear him down too quickly. He needed an alternative. As Tom tried to drive off his attacker, his bolts failed to connect, but Rick realized that was his chance. He retreated from Mike, putting the Birthrider between him and the fight. Mike grinned. "What's the matter, coward? You wanted to fight before, why not?" A bolt hit him from behind and he pitched forward. Rick leapt in, smashing a knee into his chin as he staggered and slamming him onto his back. That had been another clean blow to the head, but with the lucrum gap between them, Rick didn't count on it keeping Mike down. But Mike's petty vendetta didn't matter, not when the well-dressed hitman was apparently trying to disable Tom. Whatever was going on there, he had a bad feeling about it. Rick found Tom skating back across the arena with lightning crackling underneath him. Unfortunately, the hitman was drawing a gun on his position. If it had been a normal gun, it would have been nearly useless, but based on how competent the man seemed, it had to be a lucrum weapon. Possibly even a custom one designed specifically for the hitman. Either way, it was bad news, yet Rick found himself leaping to help. He burst toward the hitman with a bunion step, yet it wasn't fast enough. His fist missed, and the hitman suddenly struck him across the head with the back end of his pistol. Rick managed to stay on his feet, but found himself facing the barrel of the gun. An agonizing instant later, a glowing yellow figure collided with the hitman. Henry let out a roar as he punched the man repeatedly, the demonic aura around him adding extra power to his blows. Yet, the most they seemed able to do was disrupt the hitman's impeccable clothes because he calmly endured the blows and raised his gun again, this time at Henry. Before he could fire, Glenn charged after Henry, shattering his aura again. It looked like the center of the arena would devolve into a brawl, and Rick made a split-second decision. He used another Bunyan step to push him through the conflict, grabbing Henry around the waist as he did so. They both skidded to a halt at the side of the arena near Tom. The large man had managed to pull himself up via the chain-link fence, but his broken leg looked to be in bad shape. Since the fight in the center was chaotic enough to buy a little time, Rick turned to him.
"Is this what you were afraid of? Who is that?"
"I don't know."
Tom shook his head slowly, stunned on several levels.
"I didn't think..."
But whatever he had meant to say was interrupted by a gunshot that drew their attention. Magnus staggered backward, clutching his stomach. It didn't look like his defensive sphere had broken, but he seemed to have taken a serious injury. The hitman raised his gun to fire again, but Glenn grabbed him from behind and they wrestled over the weapon. Meanwhile, Mike flipped himself back to his feet. He saw that his friends were fighting with the hitman, but turned away from them, searching for Rick. Fighting under conditions like this was sheer stupidity. They needed to escape. It was just a question of how. One exit was clogged with audience members, another seemed to have become a brawl with underground security, a third was too close to Mike and the hitman. Then he saw their chance. Emily stood by another of the exits, having just knocked out several people. Her exit lane looked clear, and he thought it led to the surface fairly quickly. Rick set Henry on his feet, but kept an arm around his friend's shoulders.
"Guys, trust me on this."
He pushed under Tom's arm, urging him to lean on him, then began to gather his strength. Emily either felt his preparation or coincidentally looked, because she made eye contact at that moment. Understanding what he meant to do, she started to shake her head, but it was too late. Rick gathered all the strength he could, extended it around his allies, and activated another Bunyan step. All three of them flashed across the arena, nearly colliding with her. Rick started to drop, having overdrawn himself. The technique wasn't meant to carry people along with him. Henry helped prop him up, leaving the three of them unsteady.
"Fine,"
Emily said, glaring over the three of them.
"Let's just get out of here."
They pushed through the doors, rushing through a poorly lit corridor. Henry managed to run on his own, though he stumbled, while Rick had to support Tom, who had clearly taken a serious beating in addition to his broken leg. Despite the circumstances, Rick glanced to the taller man to interrogate him.
"You have no idea who the gunman is. Never seen him before."
Tom winced in pain as they had to take a sharp corner, Emily leading them into the back rooms.
"He could have killed me, but he shot my arm instead."
"Why exactly did you tell us to come? You had to know something like this would happen."
"I had no idea it would be anything like this. I just thought Alger was going to force me into some sort of special match, which he did, but..."
Rick wasn't sure he completely believed that explanation, but there was little time. He trusted that Emily knew the back routes well enough to get them out, but they weren't making good time given their injuries. They burst through another door, and for a moment he thought they'd hit a dead end. Then he realized that there was an elevator at the end of the hall. Well, not exactly an elevator. Instead of an entrance, there was just a small platform without sides attached to an automatic pulley system. It looked like it went into a shaft overhead, so small that at best two people could fit through. More like a dumbwaiter than an elevator, so he wasn't sure it would be strong enough.
"It can carry people,"
Emily said, almost as if she'd read his thoughts.
"But not all of us at once. You, go first, since you seem to be the target."
She jabbed a finger at Tom, so Rick helped him approach the platform. Before he could get far, Henry stopped him.
"Let me go first, man. I'll owe you one, but I have to get out of here."
Rick frowned at him, getting Tom onto the platform.
"You still have the demonic bond to protect you. If I get shot by that guy..."
"No, I don't."
Henry grimaced for a moment, the veins in his face turning a dark yellow, and Rick realized that his co-worker was pale and sweating.
"I've drawn the max from the bond, and I'm paying for it. I can barely stay on my feet. I have to get out."
"Damn it, just decide."
Emily glared at them, her eyes briefly flicking to the door behind them. Realizing that time was essential, Rick let Henry take over helping Tom. The two of them got positioned on the small platform. There wasn't much space due to Tom's muscular body, and then pulled a lever. The platform rose smoothly, taking them into the shaft above, which left Rick on the ground with Emily. He knew it couldn't be long before the platform came back down, but he found himself glancing nervously back. They hadn't been closely trailed by anyone, and if he was an optimistic person, he might have hoped that they had lost their pursuers. Rick was not an optimistic person. He took a deep breath and prepared himself to fight again.
"What's this stupid brawl between you and Mike?"
Emily's body was tense and her aura burned tightly, but that didn't stop her from glancing over at him with a scornful look. Rick sighed.
"He came into the gym where I work looking for a fight. I let him beat the crap out of me, but I wasn't subservient enough. Damaged something his father gave him, got him in trouble, and now he has it out for me."
"Huh. I can buy that, I guess."
After considering that for a moment, Emily gave him a skeptical glance.
"You really work at one of those human practice dummy gyms. I can't imagine anything more degrading."
Irritated, Rick glanced back at the elevator. The pulleys had stopped moving, but they hadn't begun coming back down yet, so he was stuck with her.
"Look, it was one of the only jobs available to me, okay? It's not like it was my lifelong dream to work there."
"But you did make that decision, one way or another. You don't end up at one of those places if you've made good choices in life."
"That's rich coming from you. You said you were an engineer? That means you can pretty much do whatever you want. You don't have to make hard choices."
Emily folded her arms and frowned at him.
"I didn't just stumble into my work. I analyzed all my career opportunities and chose one I knew had good prospects. Anything else would have been wasting my life."
"Right, wasting your life."
Rick shot her a bitter glance. "That's easy to say when your parents set you on the right path, paid for your education, and..."
"My parents didn't leave me a damn thing."
She sounded surprisingly bitter, cutting into his anger, but at that moment, there was a creaking sound. When he looked up, he saw that the elevator was finally moving back down toward them. Just as he breathed a sigh of relief, he heard a second creaking. The door behind them opened, and the hitman stepped into the room, gun raised. Chapter 28. Aftermath Coffee. Emily moved faster than he could, an aura sword blazing from her left arm, but she barely managed to raise it before the hitman turned his gun on her. She froze immediately, and for a moment Rick was sure things would go poorly. Then, to his surprise, the hitman spoke for the first time.
"I have no interest in either of you. All I want is the exit route."
As he spoke, the elevator finally began to come back down, not that it did them any good. Instead of responding, Emily just kept moving her sword slowly, extended in front of her. She couldn't block bullets, could she? Aura might have no limitations to movement speed, but human reaction times simply weren't that fast. The biological limits could be changed with Lucrim, but Emily had a generation rate of 85,000, not the hundreds of thousands that required.
"Stalling me is an aggressive act."
The hitman raised his other hand to brace his gun, and it looked like he might really fire it, so Rick spoke up quickly. He wasn't sure if there was any plan at all, but delaying him until others could arrive might be their only chance.
"We're not going to surrender when you're just going to go kill Tom."
"I don't need to do anything else to the target."
The hitman finally gave him the slightest glance, as if Rick was beneath his notice.
"But I don't have any instructions to leave you alive."
"How can we trust anything you say?"
"You're stalling."
The hitman's eyes narrowed, and his hand tensed as he pulled the trigger. Before he could, Emily's sword went through his arm. She hadn't moved, still standing in position, but the aura blade had sliced through the gun and most of the hitman's arm. He hadn't even seen it move. Did it have a ranged form? There was no time to consider that, because the hitman only winced for a moment at the loss of his arm. He simply reached into his pocket with his remaining hand and drew a second gun. Before he could get it into position, Rick leapt across the space between them and tackled him. Or at least he tried. Running into the hitman's waist was like colliding with a pillar of concrete, and Rick immediately knew he couldn't drop him. But though his opponent burned with intense lucrum, he wasn't so powerful that he could just ignore a tackle. Barreling forward, Rick pushed his opponent back against the wall and rammed his shoulder into the man's stomach. A moment later, the hitman brought an elbow down on his back. The force of the blow flattened Rick to the floor instantly, and pain screamed through his back. Though he forced himself to move, he wasn't fast enough. The hitman was raising the small pistol directly at him. Abruptly, his arm blurred into a different position. In a flash of movement Rick couldn't follow, a blade of purple aura was embedded in the wall beside them. Yet, though the aura blade had moved almost instantly, the hitman had pulled his hand out of the way. His arm was raised in a defensive position now, but it was only a matter of time before he aimed again, this time at Emily. But that was enough time for Rick. He braced his hands on the floor and spun, driving a kick into his opponent's legs. It only staggered the hitman for a moment, and he glanced down with a look of scorn. Then there was an aura blade through his chest. Emily tore it out through the side, leaving the hitman to collapse in a bloody mess. Some of it hit Rick, forcing him to collapse backward away from it. He hit the ground painfully, his strength spent in that attack. At least the hitman was finally dead, his aura flickering out. But Emily stood over him, aura blade crackling as she stared down at him with a cold expression.
"You saw my trick."
"Wait." Rick raised his arms peacefully, forcing himself to maintain eye contact. "Whatever you did with your sword, I won't breathe a word of it. Just letting me go would be much simpler than risking an investigation, especially because Tom and Henry knew you were with me."
"Jesus Christ."
Emily rubbed her eyes with her free hand. After that, she gave him a wry look that made her seem much more human.
"I was pissed that you saw the secret, not thinking of killing you. What kind of monster do you think I am?"
Shrugging, Rick nodded in the direction of the hitman's body. "I mean, thank you for saving me?"
"No, I'd have had a difficult time without you. And you did a good job of playing support instead of uselessly throwing yourself against someone much stronger than you."
Emily regarded him coolly for a moment, then lifted him up with one hand.
"Come on, let's get out of here."
"Do we want to leave the body for security to find?" He went along with her to the elevator platform, though he looked over his shoulder uncertainly.
"Security in this place can be a bit indiscriminate, and I don't trust Alger in the slightest. No, we need to get out."
She stepped up onto the platform and grabbed the central cable. Without very much space, it was going to be a bit awkward, but since their lives were at stake, Rick just pushed through it, stepping on across from her and grabbing the same cable. Emily reached down to pull the lever, and they started to rise. The platform moved slowly, and he was afraid that Mike would barge in to attack, but the room remained silent. Going through the shaft in the ceiling, they'd need to push together a bit, which might be awkward, especially because he could imagine Emily scowling at him the entire time. To try to avoid the uncomfortableness, he decided to head it off. "That sword technique is a good one. Non-lethal at low intensity, but it uses the same skills for lethal fighting. And not many would expect a melee weapon to be able to double as a ranged attack. You probably could have taken him off guard even without me, just because he was underestimating you."
"Oh, so you were playing dumb before?"
Emily averted her eyes, seeming more uncomfortable about his comments than the fact that they were brushing up against each other.
"It takes too much time to generate a new blade, though, and that always gives warning that I'm preparing to attack."
"Still, those are skill and power problems you can solve. The design is good."
"Thanks."
They passed into the ceiling, the world around them growing dark. While they were still passing through, Emily spoke more quietly.
"It's my design, actually."
Rick's eyebrows rose, and he was glad the darkness hid his surprise. She seemed to respect him a tiny bit more than before, so he didn't want to ruin that by acting like a fool. Designing new Lucrum techniques was crazy to him, but he supposed not for her.
"Huh, then you're a Lucrum engineer."
"Not as my main job."
They reached the top, the elevator coming out in a slot in what appeared to be a small abandoned shed. The doorway lay open, letting in lights from the street outside. Emily quickly moved away from him toward it, though she kept speaking.
"It's not like I created it from scratch. There are a lot of open-source fundamentals to build on, and I have some proprietary designs from work."
"That just makes sense. Why reinvent the wheel?"
Originally, his only objective had been to make Emily favorably inclined toward him so that she wouldn't kill him or otherwise turn on him. Now he hoped she wouldn't leave, both because she might be able to help and because it might be interesting to see what she was like when she wasn't hostile. They headed out into the street, and he felt like it was finally over. Yes, Mike could still show up and attack him, but he couldn't hear any sounds of the fight going on in the underground. Based on the tunnels they'd passed through and the height of the elevator, they were quite some distance from the arena. Hopefully clear of the aftermath, though Emily set off down the street at a purposeful stride.
I don't want to stalk you, Rick said, but I'm not exactly relaxed after all that.
No kidding.
Emily rubbed her left wrist slowly.
That was only the third person I've killed. The world of Lucrum is vicious, but you don't get used to it.
All he could do was nod. I've never killed anyone. They continued to walk in silence for a time before he decided to speak up. Is it okay if I ask you some questions?
I suppose there's no harm. We're technically on the same team, or at least we will be.
You mean Granny Whitney? That was just a guess based on her previous comment, but judging from the way she looked at him, he'd been right. After a sharp stare, Emily turned sharply down another street and gestured for him to follow.
This way. We need to get to a secure location first.
Security turned out to be a rundown diner on the next street, its neon sign buzzing obnoxiously overhead. Even at this time of night, it had a decent number of people inside and in the parking lot. Perhaps being in public mattered more than any direct defenses. They slipped into a corner booth where they could watch the nearby area carefully. When the waitress came, Emily ordered two coffees without asking him. As soon as the waitress was gone, she turned her cool gaze to him.
Whitney wants to recruit you as her featherweight, doesn't she?
Rick nodded. Yeah, she already did.
You shouldn't trust her. She might seem kind on the surface, but
the same day we met, she killed someone in front of me, then used it for blackmail. Emily responded with a wry smile that transformed her face.
Then I see my warning is entirely wasted on you.
They were interrupted when the waitress returned with her coffee. She tried to get them to order dessert rather aggressively, but Emily glared her away. When she turned back, the smile was gone, but her coolness no longer seemed so hostile. Both of them took a sip of coffee, Rick wondering who was going to pay. Most likely she didn't even think about such things, not with an engineer's salary. Eventually, he realized that he was going to need to keep the conversation moving. I'm guessing that Whitney didn't blackmail you.
No, just bribery.
Emily sighed and sat back, holding her cup in one hand.
I'm not really into fights like these, but I needed to test myself in a real fight. Whitney decided to recruit me, so she offered me something valuable to be her middleweight.
Though Rick wanted to ask what it was she needed, he suspected that Emily wouldn't appreciate him prying. Better to take a different tack. So that's what you meant about us being on the same team. Do you know any of the other three people?
I've met the welterweight, that's the tier between us, and he's an asshole. The top two? I have little idea. Whitney never said anything about the cruiserweight class, and she hinted that everybody is going to bring in a ringer for their heavyweight.
Everybody? Implying that she's competing against other known people in the underground putting together their own teams?
So I presume. That's about all I know.
Emily took another sip of coffee and regarded him thoughtfully.
I apologize for insulting you. You're obviously talented, and you're smarter than I thought. What I can't figure out is how someone as smart as you ended up doing so little with his life.
Rick frowned, doing his best to hold back his irritation. That's a crappy apology. Emily just shrugged.
Sorry, I'm not good at dealing with people, and I don't care to be. But I mean it. Your generation rate is 25,000 lucrum, tops, and your effective strength is less considering the aura leeches. That's not great.
The world isn't a level playing field. He saw that her eyes were still skeptical, and so he pushed forward. You said your parents never gave you anything. I wasn't so lucky. Mine gave me those aura leeches.
Ah.
Emily nodded as if she understood and drank her coffee, though she still didn't understand. Still not sure what to think of her, Rick drank his own coffee. She clearly wasn't someone who had just been handed a powerful birthright core, but that didn't mean she really understood. While she must have worked hard to reach her position, and it took real talent to be an engineer, that didn't mean she understood his life, and he didn't know how to explain.
Okay, I don't think we were followed.
Emily drained the rest of her cup and stood up.
Thanks for the help, but I need to get home and take care of some things. I suppose we'll see each other later.
Aren't we worried about the authorities? What's going to happen after all this?
Alger will make sure it gets covered up. Don't worry about it.
She headed out, paying on the way before he could object, and leaving him sitting there alone. Only after she was gone did it really get through to him that he had nearly died. His hands trembled with an emotion he couldn't describe, somewhere between fear and excitement, making it difficult to drink his coffee. It was almost like the old days, when those with power had done whatever they wanted and fights to the death in the street had been common. In the modern era, the law might look the other way when it came to normal fights, but people didn't just kill each other. Except, apparently, they did. Part of him expected to see Mike again despite everything, but gradually he admitted that it probably wouldn't happen. Mike's plan to attack would have been thoroughly foiled by the chaos, and most likely he wouldn't be able to try something so blunt again, especially not because it gave the hitman an opening to attack Tom. Except the hitman hadn't been trying to kill anyone, if Tom was to be believed. Had the hitman known about the potential disruption and used it? Could he be connected to Mike in some way? It could just as easily be a random coincidence or a complex connection based on elements he didn't even know existed. There were no answers because the only person who knew for sure was dead. Rick quietly drank his coffee. Chapter 29. Cleanup. Given everything that had happened, Rick expected to hear about it on the news, but instead, there was nothing. Even when he headed into work the next day, there was nothing whatsoever on the news about it, online or on local television. Had it been covered up somehow? Or did things like this happen regularly and they simply never made their way to the public news? When he arrived, he discovered that the house of the Cosmic Fist had its sidewalk covered in broken glass and beer bottles. Right now, his co-worker Danny was working on cleaning it up and gave him a civil nod. They didn't have intersecting shifts much, but Danny was all right. Single and handsome in a fatherly-looking late 30-something sort of way, so he got a lot of the female clients in the same age bracket. "We had a mess with some drunks," Danny said. "Most likely Jimmy will send you out here to help." "Guess I'll take my chances first, but you're probably right. Just be glad I already got the vomit cleaned up." Stepping over the broken glass, Rick walked into the gym. It wasn't in great shape either, dirty towels lying around and equipment not put away. Probably because Danny was busy cleaning the sidewalk and their boss was obviously not going to do any work. Jimmy sat in his usual place, paging through a magazine.
"Rick,"
he gave a grunt by way of greeting,
"we're gonna need you outside."
"Okay, I'll help out in a bit. I just wanted to ask, was there any news about a fight last night?"
"Nope. Only reason I know anything happened is that Henry tried to call to get time off."
Jimmy looked up at him, eyes revealing nothing.
"A lot of stuff like that happens, kid, even in a place the size of Branton. Hell, if you get out into the country, there are lucrum duels and the police just look the other way. Relax and do your job."
Rick nodded and headed out, though it wasn't that simple for him. In addition to potential problems so serious they'd involved a hitman,